Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Back in the 1980s, the Swiss watch industry, once the epitome of the Swiss tradition of quality and national pride, was on its deathbed. The Japanese had moved in and introduced a new fad that swept the industry and the market, the digital quartz watch. The Swiss industry was in such bad shape that the creditors called in a Zurich consultant to advise them how best to liquidate the industry. The consultant's name was Nicholas Hayek. But instead of adding his voice to the purveyors of doom and gloom, Hayek seized the opportunity and bought up the ailing Swiss watch industry, which included prestigious names like Omega, Tissot, Longines, and Hamilton, just to name a few. But Nicholas Hayek decided that what the industry needed was not more money to keep it afloat, but rather a brand new concept that would beat the Japanese at their own game. The answer was the Swatch. Nicholas Hayek died the other day at 82, while at his desk in the office in the Swiss watchmaking capital Biel, northwest of Bern. There are few, if any, people who don't know the Swatch. Just in case you don't, it represented a revolution in the Swiss watch industry and the world's taste in watches. It was simple, high-tech, fashionable, and most of all, cheap. The rest is history. Today, the Swiss watch industry is alive and well, thanks to Nicholas Hayek. But he didn't leave it at watches. This innovative and arguably most outstanding Swiss entrepreneur in recent times took his creativity to another field, the automobile. Initially, his idea was for a small car that would park easily in cities. And to use his own words, it had to have enough room for two people and to carry a case of beer. The working title for the car was the Swatch Car, or Swatchmobile. But alas, Hayek's vision of an ecologically friendly car based on electro power was not considered realistic at the time by his German partner, Daimler-Benz. So he left the project. But Daimler decided to market the car on its own, using conventional technology. They gave it the name Smart. One might get the impression that Nicholas Hayek was a ruthless, merciless, cold-hearted businessman driven only by the bottom line. But he wasn't. Hayek was from the old school. He was sometimes called a patriarch and could be stubborn, but he cared about the people who worked for him and felt responsible for them. Those who knew him and worked under him spoke of a good employer with scruples. Nicholas Hayek himself was quoted as saying, "My employees will always have a job." And he had 10,000 of them. He was obviously not the hire-and-fire variety CEO, of which we have far too many today. But while the Swiss lament the loss of one of their most outstanding business personalities, let me recall that Nicholas Hayek was not really Swiss at all. He was what the native Swiss often call a paper Swiss. Nicholas Hayek was Lebanese, born in Beirut in 1928, of Lebanese and Lebanese-American parents. He emigrated to Switzerland in the 1940s. He studied here, but also in France. Nicholas Hayek is one of those creative and independent-thinking captains of Swiss industry who represented a style and philosophy of business that made Swiss managers famous and much sought after internationally. He will be missed and very difficult to replace.
Thank you.
Killian Lochmater is a friend of a mutual friend, Aubrey Diem, who also contributes to Switzerland in Sound, and he also features on the website. Killian and Aubrey know each other because they both live in Zinal, the village in southern Switzerland in Canton Valley. And Killian Lochmater has a very special profession. He is one of the top boot fitters in the world, and he has been with major ski teams of Europe and North America. Killian, exactly what is your job as a boot fitter? What exactly is involved in that job?
So exactly my job is a boot fitter. I take care of the ski boots from all my racers. It means that I have to fit out them to find the good sizes, the right plastic, and then I have to punch or to ground and to prepare the boots exactly for them, for each foot.
What does that mean? Do you have special boots that are adapted to each skier? Each one fits each skier perfectly.
Yeah, that's right. We have special ski boots. It means that's not the same ski boots where you can find in the shops. And then they have to, for all disciplines, what they do, they have a special boot for them. So we have to figure together out which plastic we want to take for the race or for the trainings and also for the disciplines.
Do the weather conditions play a role in the boot? I mean, a special boot for certain weather?
Yeah, that's right. We have sometimes, especially when we go to North America, where we can find in November this very cold temperature, we have sometimes problems because the plastic can change a lot between maybe here in Europe in the warmer temperature and then in North America. So mostly we take boots with different stiffnesses with us. So then the racers can try if it's really cold. They take normally a little bit softer one.
So you're looking at the weather conditions just before the start of the race. You might change a boot at the very last minute.
Yeah, I wouldn't say maybe in the very last minute, but it could be a day before or even in the morning.
Why is the boot so important to a skier, especially in competition?
Yeah, I would say the boots, that's right, is maybe the most important equipment in the ski, because the boots are very close to the skin or to the bones, and for the feelings, to have the good feeling between the ski and the body, it's the most important equipment, and it has to be really well fitted.
Because every movement of the skier has to be transmitted exactly to the ski, and that transition is in the boot. The boot carries all of that subtle movement, right?
Yeah, that's right. All equipments are important, but I would say the most important thing are the boots. That's right.
Well, I know you've got skiing in your blood, and you've probably been skiing all of your life. Like so many good skiers, they start as children. But how did you become such an expert in this particular field, Killian?
Yeah, I worked before many years for the skis. I was a tech guy, a serviceman for the skis, and then I stopped a little bit. I worked after I had my own business, and then the company where I work now, Rossignol, they contacted me, and they were looking for a boot fitter again, and so I came back to the World Cup, and I like it very much to now with the boot with the ski boots, because I think it's more interesting than only to do the skis.
I guess you have to take years to build up such a good reputation. You're a top specialist in this field, and I guess it takes a long time to build that reputation.
Yeah, it's right. Experience, it helps a lot. It depends also with how many races you have to do. I take care with about 100, a little bit more than 100 races from 15 different countries, and so it helps to in a short time to improve a lot, because we have many different things to do than maybe somebody who takes care only in on 5 or 10 racers. That's right.
And it means you're traveling all the time during the ski season. Are you? You're probably not home very much, are you?
Not so much. I started already in the springtime. We went to here in Europe or Scandinavia to the glaciers for testing the new boots, and then in the summertime I went with many teams to South America to our first to Argentina, southern of Patagonia, the southest point of the world. And then I went up to Chile. I stayed about a little bit more than a month in South America. And then I came back to our Swiss glaciers, the South Face Zermatt. And after that to Austria and for starting the World Cup in Sölden. After that, we went to Canada. We are actually a lot on the road, that's right.
Thank you very much and good luck.
Thank you very much.
We're standing at the edge of a river. We are in Badra Gats. Bad, B-A-D, has nothing to do with something not good. It's a German word for bath. And that gives the hint that we are actually at a spa. In fact, we're at one of Switzerland's oldest spas. Some people speculate it may actually be the oldest, although it's not clear. But when you get that old as a spa, it doesn't really matter too much anymore. We are in eastern Switzerland. You might say, North American-wise, sort of a tri-state area, but I have to explain that. We are in the southeastern corner of the canton or state of St. Gallen, and just a couple of miles away is the canton of Graubünden, also known as the Grissons, which is Switzerland's largest canton or state. And right over in front of us, we see some mountains which are actually part, I believe, or we can see part of the Principality of Liechtenstein from here, which is a completely different country with a prince, and it's almost like a fairy tale. In fact, speaking of fairy tales, this area in general is referred to as Heidi Land, referring to the famous story by Johannes Spyri, the Swiss writer from Zurich, who came to Badra Gats and used part of this in her story of Heidi. But we're going to get to those details later on. Right now, I'd like to welcome Theresia Ling to Switzerland in Sound. Theresia, you are a native of Badra Gats. You were born and raised here, and in a way, you're sort of a Heidi yourself.
Oh dear, no, I'm not a Heidi, because actually the Heidi story, it's nice to be around here, because it's a very nice area. We are embedded in the Rhine Valley, so to speak, but the river where we're standing at the moment goes directly into the Rhine, and it's called Tamina. Mm-hmm. And it comes from the gorge, the Tamina Gorge, which is a couple of miles away from here, which is a warm spa, already mentioned in the 13th and actually in the 11th century.
And it comes out at what, 37 degrees Celsius, I think, constantly.
I'm sorry, it's exactly 36.6 degrees.
Well, you really are being very precisely Swiss, aren't you?
Exactly. And that's because actually they studied about this water, because they couldn't imagine that it could stay all the time the same temperature. And actually the water which comes out of the gorge is 10 and a half years old. Hmm. Can you imagine? It went through all...
Been down in the ground that long.
Exactly, in the ground and pushed up again, of course.
So that's real mineral water.
Of course it is real mineral water.
You mentioned the Rhine River a few moments ago, and it's literally a mile downstream.
Exactly, a lot walks. I mean, for hours, and even with the bike, you can
it's
go.
A cyclist
along
dream, isn't
cyclist
it?
Cyclist dream as well. You can go from here, actually, from Badra Gats to Liechtenstein within 20 or 30 minutes.
Well, the Rhine separates Switzerland and Liechtenstein.
Exactly.
You walk over a bridge. No customs. You're just in the middle of the bridge is a sign that says, welcome to Liechtenstein. And when you go back, it says, welcome to Switzerland.
Exactly. And they even have the same money as we have.
Yeah, you don't dare tell them that they're virtually part of Switzerland, because they are a sovereign country with, of course, a prince. But in terms of everyday practical business and as far as the average public is concerned, there's hardly any difference at all.
Not at all. No, that's right, except that they have no tax to pay. So many tax to pay as we...
It's a low-tax area.
Exactly.
Okay, well, Theresia, we were talking about the water and the spa tradition, this ancient spa tradition here in Badra Gats. We have to make our way up, because we are going to a modern version of the spa. And we'll get back up on the little road. It's actually a very, very narrow street here in the village, and there's a very nice bridge going across. The village itself here is so picturesque. These buildings are so well kept. How old are some of these?
Well, you find some, most of them, the older buildings which you see here, are from the 18th, 19th century. Just like the area where we're going to now, even the park that's when Mr. Bernhard Simon at 1668 started building up a lovely park with, he had the opportunity, or he had to build a area where they could, people could stay here, and for their well-being, of course, and use the spa.
It reminds me very much of the Italian or North American approach to parks, the public park. It's very similar.
That's right. Mostly before that, it used to be just for the guests who came here. Uh-huh. The public wasn't so much allowed to go in there. They even didn't want to, because you have to think, Bad Ragaz used to be, up until this 18th century, was a poor countryside, which the people knew it, of course, but most of the people were just farmers. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, when all these kings and queens and whoever they were came over here from Russia, even.
It was because of the spas they came.
It was because of the spas, and of course, the people from the town didn't actually want to be mixed with them. So therefore it was closed before, but now it's open and everybody can of course take a walk around here.
We just passed a mini golf range here before, but you also have full-scale golf, don't you? Golf.
Exactly, we have an 18-hole golf course, and it's going to be joined very soon by a 9 golf on top of it. It's one of the nicest, actually, in Europe, they say.
Hiking, ordinary, just walking. There's horseback riding that can be done here in the summer. Everything you would imagine, the classic alpine summer sporting activities. But what about the winter? You don't have skiing right here in the village. It's not really a ski resort in that sense, is it?
In that sense, it isn't. But we got our house mountain, the Bitzol, uh-huh, which, of course, every child... I started to ski here around in the area. We just walked out the door and went up there. 10 minutes, we were up 2,200 meters, which is a fabulous view all over the Rhine Valley and even up to the Bodensee.
Mm-hmm. You could
Lake of Constance, of course, which if in a nice day like today, you feel the breeze anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have been here before, and you do have a fairly stiff breeze every once in a while. This is the legendary Föhn, isn't it? That warm wind that comes from the mountains, from the south.
Exactly. This is one of our oldest citizens, definitely, which always passed through here and took the bad weather away. Actually, the area here is well known as the area where it rains the least, you know, because of this south wind.
Mild and dry, which is very good for many ailments, especially pulmonary ailments. Lung diseases used to be treated here. That was very common in centuries gone by.
And not just for illness, also for the wine. We have a lovely vineyards all along here, if you look around.
I was going to ask you.
If you take a look across here where we're standing, where actually Heidi's home is, and at the Falknes and the Vilan, the mountains in front of us, which are about 2,100 meters high, that's actually on their foot is where the Rhine is cultivated, mm-hmm, along here, along the Rhine.
You mentioned Heidi Land, and you see this on the highway as you drive by. Welcome to Heidi Land. It's not a theme park. It's not Disneyland in that sense. But the whole area, the region, is referred to as Heidi Land because of the famous story, which has been translated into so many languages, almost as many as the Bible, I'm told. And in any case, if anyone who knows the story, maybe knew it as a child, would like to experience the feel of the place, like Johanna Spiri did. She might have stood on that bridge where we were and was inspired looking at this area. This is where Heidi was at home in the story.
Actually, yes, it's the Johanna Spiri was inspired by the area because she was invited here, and she also, I think she also used our spas.
Well, let's finally on our walk through Bad Ragaz go into the 5-star Grand Hotel. Obviously, we're moving up a great deal in the class ranking here. Have you been in here much yourself?
Well, at some occasion, of course, because there is also a restaurant for the public now, new, the Olive, which is very nice. It's Mediterranean. And
it's like something for me.
Yeah. Yes, and people, of course, we are sort of like more Mediterranean.
You have an influence from the south, don't
you? Exactly, that's true. Yeah. Because of this south wind, you know, which brings us always the nice climate.
And you were also heavily Romanized here.
Yes, definitely. That's definite, you know. And but on the other hand, you can come here easily for a drink in the evening if you wish. There's no doubt about it. And as they open up the restaurant for the public.
And normal prices.
Normal prices, yes, of course. I mean.
Well, we've walked into another area here in the Grand Hotel. This is the public area. There are different pools here, several of them, as a matter of fact, for the guests only and also for the public. Here's a picture on the wall, the way it looked. Oh, how old is that picture?
As you can see, it's made out of wood at the sides. And the water.
Not much luxury there.
Not at all, not at all, not at all.
Incidentally, what medically is known about the water? What is it used for? What's it recommended for?
It's mainly recommended for rheumatism, but for anything, because also for the veins, you know, apparently.
Circulation.
Circulation in the old time. They use, apparently, the water gets the blood pressure much easier through your body. It just happens that people can walk better, they can breathe better after, even for the lungs.
As a preventive measure, people would do this.
That's mainly used at the moment for that. That's why the spas are so important nowadays, that people prevent the illnesses and they feel relaxed also in an area like this, which you can see.
There are extensive medical facilities, not only available to guests in the Grand Hotel, but also in the village. Quite a few specialists here.
Exactly. The public is, a lot of people get sent here, especially for their illnesses. And we have around here in the area 20 doctor specialists who take care of the people from anywhere around.
Well, we're nearing the end of our visit to Bad Ragaz in eastern Switzerland. We've just come outside to a public pool, a beautiful one here, with rocks planted all around it. It looks very majestic, very natural, very rugged. And there goes the I think jacuzzi function there behind us, and there's the gambling casino over there, very discreetly done right against the base of the mountain to the south here. On the medical facilities here again, though, Theresia, I think it's important to mention that this is not only well known and popular among individuals. I think you're so respected here in Bad Ragaz that you also have the approval of Olympic physicians as well.
Exactly. They are actually preparing for all these Olympic people who live in Switzerland, the athletes which are going to the Olympics. They come here to have treatments first or even afterwards, and they're recognized as the Swiss Olympic Medical Center.
Theresia Ling, a native daughter of Bad Ragaz in eastern Switzerland, thank you so much for taking us around your village and showing us what there is to see. And there's so much to see, so much to do here. Hello, I'm sure you speak English.
I do, yes. My name is Libby.
Libby, is it true, as I've been told, that you can just walk in here, anybody can walk in here, the Lova shop at Schinnige Platte, and ask to borrow boots for the day?
That's true, yes. You can try
no
them
hitches,
out.
No fine print?
No, nothing at all. Also, you don't have to feel forced to buy boots because I'm not selling anything here.
No sales talk?
No,
no
not
pressure.
At all, no. Mm-hmm. So all you do is you grab a pair of boots, go for a walk and figure out if they fit you. If they don't fit, you can come back, grab a different pair until you get tired.
So for people, for example, who come up here in tennis shoes and don't realize that we're in an alpine environment, that's a great godsend for them, but also for others who are actually considering buying hiking boots, would like to try them out. So you do that for them.
Yeah, that's what they do. A lot of people come specifically for testing boots, and sometimes there are people who have problems with their feet, like extra wide or a bunion or whatever. And if they tell me these things, I can help them to find the proper boot, the proper shape of boot for their feet. Also, there's different kinds of boots. There's light ones, there's medium ones, there's stiffer ones. And it depends very much on the terrain that you're mostly walking, what you want.
Well, let's look at a couple of case mm-hmm. scenarios. Yeah. We're in an alpine environment here. That's
yes.
true. We have a lot of steep, rocky exactly. trails that people are on. It's not flat pavement. Mm-hmm. What are the general rules of thumb for choosing the best boot in an environment like this?
You definitely need ankle support mm-hmm. because even if you don't...
Fairly high boot then.
Yeah. Even if you don't sprain your ankle, it's not very good for your ankles because every single time you slightly trip, it pulls on your ligaments and eventually you will end up with a joint that is unstable, and that's not a good idea. So I'd say even the lightweight ones that we have, but they have ankle support, that's what you need, that's the minimum. But it would maybe even be better if you have something a little bit firmer for here, because as I said, in some places it's a little bit rocky and steep.
But on the other hand, people today are used to very light tennis shoes or track shoes, and they say, I don't want this heavy stuff on
exactly.
my feet. Is there something for them?
Yeah, there is a lot for them, because the boots are generally getting lighter and lighter. They do a lot of research. The latest style we have with a reinforcement around the ankle keeps you from tripping sideways, but they can use a lot lighter materials for them. So they are still fairly light for what support they give you. And of course I have extremely light ones, but they are limited in support. Like,
you're compromising something.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But if somebody wants to go over a glacier and needs to don crampons, they need a stiff sole, maybe even with a shank in the sole, mm-hmm. and they have to be higher.
I mean, this is your life at stake here under many circumstances.
Oh, yes.
You know,
definitely.
This is serious business.
A lot of people underestimate that problem. Even hiking around here, if they go in flip-flops, I think that's not a good idea, but that happens all the time.
Yeah. So they're glad to find out that you're here. Can people even borrow socks from you if they need to?
Exactly. We have socks for those who come with bare feet or with socks that are not appropriate.
And these are special socks too, as a rule, special sports socks.
Yes, they're moisture-wicking socks, which is especially important if you have a boot with a Gore-Tex liner, because if you have pure cotton or pure wool, you will be wet all day. You might even think the boot is leaking, which is not the case. It's just that
just your perspiration.
Perspiration can't get out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We also have hiking poles.
I've seen people walking around. They look basically like ski poles, and people are walking with these things. What's the point?
Especially when you walk down the hill, you can take a lot of weight off your joints.
Steep downhill.
Exactly. If you walk up the hill, you can push and accelerate. Yeah. So it makes sense.
But people in really good shape, they don't need those things, right?
Depends. I think there's a lot of younger people now who do not yet have problems with their joints, who use poles to prevent problems with their joints. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good idea.
Well, Libby, thank you very much indeed. You have customers here waiting.
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.